the great thing about having money is now we've got the funding we need to have our heads down here and to continue to de-risk our and advance our project. You know, with Baptiste, we completed a preliminary feasibility study in the third quarter of last year. We're now into the early stages of trade-off studies, advance of a feasibility study. You know, when I summarize what we're up to in 2024 on advancing Baptiste, there's three areas: advancing engineering work through those trade-off studies to further refine and optimize the project. The second E being the environmental work that we're doing. So the environmental and cultural baseline studies, the data that we're gathering that will position us to enter the permitting process. And the third piece is our engagement, specifically our engagement with communities and more specifically with First Nations.
The Financial Survival Network. Now more than ever. The Financial Survival Network.
And welcome. This is Financial Survival Network. I'm your host, Kerry Lutz. And hey, we're just at the beginning of April, and we wanted to get an update from our sponsor, FPX Nichols, CEO Martin Turan. And Martin, it's great to have you back on the show here. Well, as busy as 2023 was for you, it looks like 2024 is really getting off quite well. Looking at the company's financial statements, I see that last year, end of 2023, you had $30 million on hand, and I would have expected that number to go down, but it's actually gone up to $45 million.
Yeah, thanks for having us on again, Kerry. Yeah, we are certainly probably one of the better funded junior mining companies out there. Current cash balance here early April 2024 is just under $45 million as a result of really three sort of transformational strategic investments that we've done with new large corporate investors over the last 18 months. So it really sets us up in a great place. We see that there's, you know, more interest coming into the junior mining space. The gold price is doing well, copper price is doing well. That's creating better conditions for our industry. But unlike most of our peers, we don't have to think about raising money. We're well funded really for at least the next 2 years.
Yeah, it's kind of an embarrassment of riches here. So Sumitomo, major mining concern, biggest miner, Japan, made a strategic investment, and that caused your other two strategic investors to up their investments as well.
Yeah, so as I'd mentioned, really we've had these three sort of transformational investors or investments come into the company from three different sources over the last 18 months. The most recent of those is Sumitomo Metal Mining. So in January of this year, just a couple of months ago now, we invested, or rather we announced that Sumitomo is taking a 9.9% interest in FPX's shares via private placement. That placement was done at 48 cents per share. That represented a 72% premium to our market price at the time. So a significant premium, really showing the keenness that Sumitomo has for FPX and for the project. And also really demonstrating the fact that this was a competitive sort of process where we had multiple parties interested in taking a position. Sumitomo is the largest mining and metal processing company in Japan. They're one of the world's largest nickel producers. And this type of investment, taking an equity position in a junior, is unlike anything they've ever done. Sumitomo typically only would like to take positions directly in joint ventures at the asset level. But taking this investment at the equity level is really reflects FPX's desires. We don't want to joint venture our project. We do want to make sure that we're taking that investment at the top company level. That allows FPX to retain control of 100% of our projects, most specifically our flagship Baptiste nickel project in British Columbia, and really allows us to make sure that we control all of the cards with respect to the development of the project and the ultimate strategy around potential M&A, which we view as the ultimate sort of liquidity opportunity for shareholders.
Sure. And now with Sumitomo, the largest miner coming on board, you have Jagmec, which is Toyota, the largest car company. So this is a major commitment from the Japanese mining and industrial companies into FPX.
Yeah, it's been an interesting journey for us. We definitely have to your point, really have several major touch points with different aspects of the Japanese ecosystem. It really started with our joint venture announced about a year ago now with JOGMEC, which is a Japanese government agency. It's focused on mineral exploration. And so we are doing a joint venture exploration alliance with them, where JOGMEC is funding 100% of our work by our geologists to go out and find other nickel deposits that are similar to our flagship Baptiste project. And JOGMEC's interest there is really to try to secure mineral title, or at least partial ownership of mineral title, in the next generation of nickel deposits, specifically for the EV battery supply chain. You know, the Japanese industry, the Japanese government, Japanese society is very focused on its auto industry. And, you know, I make the point very often that the car makers will only be able to make a successful transition to EVs if they can secure raw materials. So this joint venture we have with the Japanese government really represents a first step that they are taking to try to secure the next generation of disruptive nickel deposits of the type that we as a company at FPX are focused on. So that was the first sort of element. Then in September of last year, we announced an MOU, strategic collaboration agreement, with a company called Prime Planet Energy and Solutions. That's Toyota's battery company. It's a joint venture company they have with Panasonic, which is another large Japanese company that specializes in EV batteries. That framework agreement, or that MOU, provides a basis for us to be discussing potential commercial opportunities for integration with Toyota's battery company and potential investment by that company in the future, to allow us to continue to move our project forward. And then finally, you know, our the new investment with Sumitomo, the largest mining company. So between the mining companies, the auto industry, and then the government itself, we've really become kind of enmeshed within the Japanese ecosystem.
Yeah, and I would think that with Sumitomo's investment, that was kind of the final validation of the whole concept of the type of mining that FPX is doing here.
Yeah, it's an excellent point, Kerry. We are doing something new. We're doing something disruptive here and innovative in nickel mining. Our Baptiste project is not a sulfide deposit, which is what's typically found in places like Canada and Russia. It's not a laterite deposit, which is the geology typical in places like Indonesia and the Philippines. The nickel here is hosted in a novel mineral called awarowite. And the market has often kind of looked at this with skepticism. You know, we often say that the mining industry, it's the race to be second, not the race to be first. Well, we are doing something new and different here, and we can proudly own that now and say that we're proud to be innovators in that regard. And that innovation has now been sort of validated and really verified through extensive due diligence by Sumitomo in making their investment, by the Toyota battery company, by JOGMEC, but also by our other strategic investors. Last year, we took on a strategic investment from Outokumpu, which is Europe's largest stainless steel company. And prior to that, we had an announcement about another major strategic investor, another large company. We're not in a position to identify the name of that company, but suffice to say at this point, between that group, Outokumpu, and Sumitomo, we've got three very large public companies, all with 9.9% ownership interests in FPX, all working independently of each other, all having done extensive due diligence and having really put their money to work to get involved in what they, I think, are also starting to understand is a disruptive new source of nickel for the market.
Now, one question one of my FSN audience had about FPX I got recently, said, with all the additional strategic investors you've taken on recently, are you limited to taking on new ones? Are you currently looking for them? Or are you happy with what you have and you're just moving ahead from here?
We're very happy with who we have. We have the money, as I said earlier, that'll fund our work for at least the next 2 years. So we're not looking for new investors. But at the same time, there's nothing limiting us in taking on new strategic investors in the future, if that's the right thing to do. And I can further tell you that there's no shortage of interest. We continue to get a lot of inbound interest from, you know, large auto companies, large battery companies, and large mining companies who are interested in this project. You know, the more validation we get via the investments from Outokumpu, Sumitomo, and the others, it only creates more FOMO, let's say, around other companies in this space to want to get involved in this. So we're in the luxurious position of having a lot of options in that regard, but not really needing to move on any of them. And I guess that's quite distinct to what our share price performance has been, where it's been very muted. We still continue to trade at a significant discount to where we just raised money with the Japanese and with those other strategic investors. So that's the disconnect that we really want the market to understand, the huge opportunity here to look at FPX at a price level that is significantly below, almost 50%, actually more than 50% below where the Sumitomo just invested just a couple months ago.
Yeah, I find it interesting, you know, the financial risk because of all the investment that has flowed into the treasury, there just isn't really financial risk. What you're faced with is process. You're faced with time, filling out forms, doing studies, getting approvals. That's your biggest challenge right now. How are you preparing? How are you handling that challenge?
Yeah, I mean, the great thing about having money is now we've got the funding we need to have our heads down here and to continue to de-risk our and advance our project. You know, with Baptiste, we completed a preliminary feasibility study in the third quarter of last year. We're now into the early stages of trade-off studies in advance of a feasibility study. But I'd say, you know, when I summarize what we're up to in 2024 on advancing Baptiste, there's three areas that sort of the three E's, as I call them: advancing engineering work through those trade-off studies to further refine and optimize the project. The second E being the environmental work that we're doing. So the environmental and cultural baseline studies, the data that we're gathering that will position us to enter the permitting process. And the third piece is our engagement. Specifically our engagement with communities, and more specifically with First Nations communities and rights holders. And that's an area I think we're very focused this year on laying the groundwork to have a collaborative decision-making framework that is where we work on a collaborative basis, not just consulting with nations, but actually collaborating with them as we go to enter the environmental assessment process in the first quarter of 2025. That's an innovative new approach to how to do environmental assessments and permits for mining projects, where we go beyond the obligation to consult and actually commit to collaborating with these communities. And we're seeing a lot of great momentum in our relationships with multiple nations that are going to be ultimately impacted by this project and which may benefit from the project if one day it does become a mine.
Yeah, that's an important distinction. There's a big difference between just telling somebody, hey, we're going to do this, and actually talking to them and planning it out in concert. And that is a big step forward.
It is. It's the right way to do things. It's a 21st century approach to project development, mine development, industrial development, where you know, communities are not just viewed as stakeholders. They are rights holders. They have real rights and interests in the areas where these mine projects are developed. And so the best way to success, both in the short, the medium, and the long term, to preserve that social license in the long term, is from the start to ensure that is a collaborative decision-making process. That's what we're committed to. That's what we're discussing right now with our various First Nations partners. And there are multiple groups involved here. And all of that is really, I think, laying the groundwork, setting the table for a constructive collaborative decision-making process with these nations as we enter the formal regulatory process in 2025.
Well, this project seems to be a win for everybody concerned, for the provincial government, for obviously the central government, and for all the various groups that are there, that it's going to lead to a huge windfall for the various First Nations and others, you know, communities in the vicinity there.
Yeah, this is a project that can deliver big economic benefits, but beyond that, we think it's a project that can be used to really leverage other benefits that are more central concerns for communities. For example, there are things that we can do around certain environmental sensitivities, key habitats for plants or for animals. How can we use the project as a lever and leverage the investment in the project to actually improve and enhance habitat for key species like caribou, for example? How can we lever the project to ensure that important cultural sites and cultural ceremonies can occur out on the land base, and how can we support those activities and preserve those important cultural touchstones? And yeah, beyond that, sure, there are potential economic benefits that are profound. This is a project that could have a 30-year mine life. A lot of these communities have been exposed to the impacts of the logging industry. Well, with logging, forestry companies, they come into a territory, they take out all the trees, that creates jobs for a certain period of time. But when the trees have been felled, that goes away. Jobs are not long-term. When we think about a 30-year mine life project, we think about something that is not just providing jobs, but rather provides careers over multiple decades and allows these communities to actually build businesses that are going to be meaningful economic participants. So they're, the benefits of the project go far beyond the economic, the financial aspects, but that is certainly an important piece of it.
So talking about the nickel prices right around $7.80 a pound, copper as of today was $4.14. The ratio is a little out of kilter here.
Yeah, we do often talk about that ratio, Kerry, of the sort of the copper, or rather the nickel to copper price, which typically historically has been in that range of sort of 2.5 to 1 or so. And today we find that ratio is below 2 to 1. Copper price has had a nice lift here just over the last few weeks, as I think, you've seen some challenges on the supply side and some stronger than expected demand coming out of many countries, including China. With nickel, we've certainly come off the bottom. The nickel price had declined about 50% over the last year, and that has had a huge impact, I think, obviously, on nickel companies and on equity valuations. Nickel price got down to as close to $7 a pound. At that level, you had about 50% or so of current nickel production losing money at that level. So $7 a pound is just unsustainably low. We're now bumping up close to $8 a pound. There's still a significant amount of production that loses money at that level. So, all in all, that tells you that the nickel price probably needs to be higher to preserve a lot of that existing production. And so we see the kind of the positive move you've had in gold, positive move you've had in copper. In past cycles, we've seen that has become a bit of a leading indicator of potential positive movement in the nickel price, and just in generally increasing the interest in speculators and investors in the junior mining industry. So I think that's something that FPX could certainly benefit from here going forward.
I first met you 6 years ago in PDAC, and you were doing one-to-one interviews at the show. And I remember sitting down with you and saw you really had a vision. But here we are 6 years later, the amount of progress that you made, I think you always knew it was going to happen, but it just really caught on recently.
Yeah, I think, again, I've been the CEO of FPX for just over 8 years now. And when I took that role on, the nickel price was below $4 a pound. Nickel was a four-letter word. No one wanted to hear about it. But I knew that we had a big deposit here. One that could be economic at a relatively low nickel price and generate a strong rate of return, but that patience was going to be required. Fast forward 8 years later, we're still in a position where we feel like we haven't been rewarded by the market, but in terms of the technical progress of the project, now looking at getting into permitting next year, getting into a feasibility study, and having had the validation of all these various large corporate strategic investors, all of that's very gratifying. The piece that's not gratifying yet is the kind of the share price and the returns for our investors, where we still see that there's a huge opportunity to look at the stock today to see an outcome in years to come that could hopefully be rewarding to our loyal shareholder base.
I wholeheartedly agree. Hey, we didn't even touch upon Van and the prospectivity there, which is enormous in its own right, but enough for today. Just go over to the company website, fpxnickel.com, sign up for notifications, ticker symbols on the OTC, FPOCF. on the TSX. It's FPX. And Martin, well, I'll be looking forward to more developments. I'm watching your news feed, and we'll talk with you again soon.
Thanks a lot, Kerry. Always good to chat.
The Financial Survival Network.